This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Cashing Out rolls on from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Dustin Sweetelson here, you there. Thanks for tuning in, however you may be doing so. SiriusXM, Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Real quickly, before we get to Nick Ferguson, who I love chatting with, and he set me straight a year ago about the Denver Broncos, and I'm going to explain to him why I'm kind of joining the party there with this team. But there's a baseball game in action. I said I was going to do it. I haven't bet any baseball tonight. But the Dodgers did take the lead back from the Brewers, 4-2 in the seventh. Milwaukee has a runner on first, nobody out. Dreyer's on the hill. I'm taking a flyer. Give me Milwaukee plus 360 just for some funsies here to sweat out throughout the night here on the program. Now, last year, Nick Ferguson was on the show a lot. He did a tremendous job, and he was constantly fighting my stubbornness to believe in Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos. Now, as we get set for this season, I'm looking at the odds. I think the Denver Broncos are being disrespected, and we have to talk about that with our buddy Nick Ferguson. 10 years in the National Football League, defensive back, the Jets, the Broncos, the Texans, and he also hosts shows on KOA in Denver, at Nick Ferguson underscore 25 on X. Nick, when I tell you that the Denver Broncos are 20-1 to win the Super Bowl, which is a big number. It's $100 wins 2,000. It's the same as the Bengals. It's a little bit longer than the Lions. Do you believe this Denver team can pick up where they left off a year ago before Bo Nix got hurt and potentially playing another AFC title game?
Abso-freaking-lutely. And here's why. Here's one thing that the Broncos and Bo Nix has that most other teams around the NFL, they don't have. They have a vaulted defense led by Vance Joseph. And oh, by the way, they only lost one piece, John Franklin Myers, who's now playing with the Tennessee Titans. They brought most of their guys back. And what we saw of what the Broncos were able to do last year, 7-1 record at home, which was phenomenal. That was due in part because of their defense. And I know when you talk to a lot of national analysts, they're going to talk about Bo Nix in the fourth quarter comebacks. And I tell them every single time, how do you think he did that, right? The defense had to hold the opponents to no points or to 3 points and allow for that massive comeback. And I'll tell you this, the Broncos defense has been talking about this low key. Last year, 63 sacks. So 2 years in a row, Dustin, they led the league in sacks. So they're hoping to triple that number and go from 63, maybe to 72, maybe to 82. But all I know, if you Bo Nix, you like the fact that you're playing with house money in the Denver Broncos defense.
Absolutely. Now, they won't go anywhere if the ankle's not okay. They'll go as far as his arm can go, but his arm can't go anywhere unless the ankle takes him there. The ankle bone connected to the shin bone.
Hold on, Dustin. Yeah? Whoa. We're not even talking about the ankle anymore.
Oh, we good. I was going to ask you, are we concerned about the ankle? We're not concerned.
No, we are not concerned about the ankle. So we're going to stop with the bad mojo.
Okay.
No bad mojo. The ankle is good.
Then talk to me about the offense. Davis Webb is the offensive coordinator, which is kind of weird because Sean Payton is such a control freak. I understand that Payton's going to be by his side, but how different do you anticipate this offense looking with Davis Webb, an up-and-coming offensive mastermind, now taking over the play calling?
It's going to look massively different because last season, some of the issues were the players were coming out far too late. And we saw on several different occasions, Bo Nix looking at the sideline, clapping his hands. And I'm not going to mouth to you some of the things that he was mouthing, telling them to get the play in as quickly as possible. Davis Webb is going to get the play in quickly. But also, too, we're going to see a lot of pre-snap movement. We didn't see a lot of that in Sean Payton's offense over the past 2 years, but watching the Broncos move in training camp, that was kind of a point of emphasis. How can we create more space, more matchups for Bo to operate? So this is where we're going to see Davis Webb start to bring about more execution. And more importantly, you now have Jalen Waddle. So that means more explosive plays. And for you fantasy owners out there, that may mean more points for you as well.
Nick Ferguson is our guest, 10 years in the National Football League, Jets, Broncos, Texans, hosting shows, KOA in Denver, at Nick Ferguson underscore 25 on X. What does Jaylen Waddle do to this offense? Because you combine it with Sutton, you have Troy Franklin out there. How does this offense operate now with another dangerous speedster and Jaylen Waddle mixed in?
Well, it's all about an arms race. And a lot of teams now are running more 11 personnel than we've seen, I guess, even when I played. So you want to get your fast guys on the field. You want to be able to put them out in space. And when you think about what Jaylen Waddle brings to this offense, that's another layer as far as being a vertical threat. Bo took a couple of shots downfield, but not as many as the Broncos fans and even the coaching staff would have liked for them to take. And Jaylen Waddle was their target. He was their target this past offseason, and he was their target last year at trade deadline. But the Miami Dolphins didn't want to part ways with him. But watching him in practice, the ability to accelerate, to decelerate, to catch a slant route and turn it up and go vertical, that is something that the Broncos offense lacked last year. But I remember as you were talking about the Broncos wide receivers, you failed to bring up one very important aspect of the Broncos receiver personnel, and that was Marvin Mims. So between Mims and Waddle, that's speed for days. And watching Marvin Mims, he's one of the better receivers on the Broncos roster at tracking the ball in the air to his hands on explosive plays. So you put Jaylen Waddle, Troy Franklin, you put Pat Bryant, Marvin Mims, and Cortland Sutton on the field at the same time. Obviously, you can't do them at the same time, but you understand what I'm saying. A rotation of guys. That is going to help Bo Nix's number. And I'm predicting Bo Nix's numbers are going to be Drew Brees-like. We're talking about in the 4,000, 4,200 range if all goes well and the Broncos get the run game on track.
I'm glad you said that because I went back and looked. Drew Brees, his third year in Sean Payton's system, that's when things really took off. Like, he was good before that, but that's when he made the jump to 34 touchdowns, threw for 5,000 yards for the first time in his career. Third year for Bo Nix here. Now, at times last year, Nick, they really lacked balance. J.K. Dobbins getting hurt was a big blow. R.J. Harvey, I like the potential, but feels like more of a receiving back at this point in his career. Dobbins is healthy. R.J. Harvey's back. And Jonah Coleman fell to them in the fourth round. How do you anticipate the run game looking this season?
It's run, run, and more running. And once again, let's not forget, Sean Payton is a former quarterback, and he's like a surgeon. A surgeon wants to cut, right? And Sean Payton wants to throw the ball down the field. When you think about the number of attempts that Bo Nix had last year, we're talking 39 to 40 attempts. And most people would tell you that's because the Broncos couldn't run the ball. That is not true. This is where Davis Webb comes in to keep the offense on schedule and produce more balance, because there were moments where the Broncos would attempt to run the ball and then that run play would get shut down and that would be it. The run game is over, and Sean Payton seemingly would kill the run game. But this year, with three dynamic backs that can actually run between the tackles, but more importantly, you said about RJ. RJ is your pass-catching wide receiver. And remember, when Sean Payton was in New Orleans, he had several pass-catching running backs. And the comp for RJ would be Pierre Thomas, who did a great job in Sean Payton's offense. So you need your running backs to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield, be able to stop blitzing linebackers, but also be able to carry and tote the rock and not put it on the turf. So I'm thinking that the Broncos are trying to have a three-headed monster. And if they do that, that ankle that you talked about, that no one's talking about here in Denver with Bo Nix, we don't have to worry about that because the stress is now off of him and on the shoulders of the running backs.
That's a great call. Nick Ferguson is our guest, former NFL DB, Denver radio host, KOA in Denver, at @NickFerguson_25 on X. How about the division? Because Kansas City is the favorite at +160. The Chargers are +190. Denver's +225. Nick, even as someone who was not high on this team a year ago, and I think Kansas City can bounce back, but they have flaws. The Chargers could be good, but it's still Justin Herbert. Denver is +225 to win this thing. They're the third shot on the board. Do you think that they can win the West?
I think it's going to be a tough outing. And say what you want to say about Justin Herbert. I would say that their offensive line wasn't healthy last season. And think about it. There was a three-game difference between the total schedule of the Denver Broncos and when you look at the Chargers. So this Charger team is going to be tough. And oh, by the way, a guy that I work with in San Francisco, Mike McDaniels, He is, a genius when it comes to run plays. He didn't do a great job as far as being a head coach, but when it comes to the run game and being an offensive coordinator, and your quarterback is Justin Herbert, you got to look out. That's the biggest threat. And I don't understand how Kansas City has the odds that they have of winning the AFC West. Their defense isn't that good, wasn't that good. Chris Jones is on the wrong side of his career. Patrick Mahomes, say what you want to say. Oh, he looks great in training camp, but no one's chasing him right now. Trust me, that first game, those dogs going to hunt as far as their pass rushes for the Denver Broncos. And we're going to really see if Patrick Mahomes is truly Clark Kent or Superman.
Yeah, we're going to find out also. The weapons haven't been improved, and they lost both their corners to the Rams. He's Nick Ferguson. Yep. He is the man. He does an awesome job. We'll be chatting throughout the NFL season at @NickFerguson_25 and on KOA in Denver. Appreciate the time as always, buddy. We'll chat soon.
All right, Dustin, be good. Go Broncos.
Yeah, he's fired up. I'm with him, man. I was late to the party here with the Broncos, but I'm a believer. I am a believer now. Even though I don't think he's very accurate throwing the football, I don't care. It's the same thing as Jalen Hurts. And if Jalen Hurts can win a Super Bowl, I think Bo Nix can win a Super Bowl. Hey, college football is almost here, and betting it blind is a losing strategy. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide. Get it for free with VSiN Pro. Previews of every FBS team, our preseason top 50, power ratings, betting systems, all that and more. Plus, you'll also get our NFL Betting Guide, Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide. Try it today for just $9.99 or lock in a full year. Save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe.
Cashing out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Final score in Santa Clara, 19-13. The Tennessee Titans pick up the dub on the road in the NFL preseason. They cover the number of 6 as the favorite in this spot. We go under the total of 40, which puts us at 6-0 to the under in Thursday's action in the NFL preseason. Underdogs did go 4-2 against the spread. We did get one tie with Indy and New England tied up at 13s. However, the Patriots do cash +3.5 if you were betting the spread in that contest. So 6-0 to the under, 4-2 against the spread. Underdogs go. Do those trends continue into Friday night? We will touch on that throughout the show here on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Thanks for hanging out with us on SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Late night baseball action. Right now, the Dodgers, 8th inning, lead the Brewers 4-2. We took a little bit of Milwaukee +350 on the money line, I believe it was. That's not looking great. I want a little flyer on a dog here. I don't think it's crazy, though, that Milwaukee could come back and maybe force extras and we can do something or even take the lead. I don't love the way the Dodgers bullpen's performed lately. Tanner Scott hasn't looked right. I don't really trust Edwin Diaz right now. They haven't even gotten to the big guns yet. So in the 8th inning, if the Brewers with the middle of the order up right now and the name of Gary Sanchez hitting in the 3 spot, he's 1-for-2 today. If he can get something cooking here down by 2 against Henriquez, I don't know. I think that Milwaukee might be live here. They are +1.5, +215. I kind of like that right now. +880 on the money line. You know what? It's looking a bit far-fetched, but this is what you do in baseball. You take shots on numbers that you think don't really represent the potential outcome of this Dodgers bullpen having another hiccup. In Anaheim, the score is 6-0. The Angels on top of the Rangers. Jacob DeGrom continues to not be the same guy on the road. Also, he's getting up there in age, man. You wonder when the wheels start to fall off. He's had a solid season, but the ERA all the way up to 3.95. He only went 2 innings tonight, allowed 6 hits, 2 earned, 3 strikeouts on 53 pitches. That is concerning for Jacob DeGrom. I didn't see anything out there about an injury, but I'll keep you updated on the late night baseball as that is the only thing currently going on in the sports world right now. With that, we should touch on a little college football, and we're doing that now on the show with a little thing we're calling the campus crawl, bouncing around at different locations, seeing what the top stories are. And out in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, there's been a lot of drama already, and the LSU Tigers are reality TV, and I'm here for it. The latest has nothing to do with betting, But I think it just adds a wrinkle to what we're looking at here and how crazy the fan base is, and apparently how crazy the former players are, because in case you missed it earlier today, Jaden Daniels has informed LSU that it can, quote, no longer use his name, image, and likeness per Mark Schlabaugh because he is deeply disappointed and feels profoundly disrespected that the LSU Tigers allowed sophomore corner DJ Pickett to wear his number 5 jersey, which is the craziest thing I've ever heard. One, Jaden Daniels seems so mild-mannered and so calm. Secondly, jerseys get reused all the time. I hate to break it, Tim. There's only so many options for players to wear. Number 5 is going to get used, and I think he's upset because number 9 for Joe Burrow hasn't been used lately. But at some point, it has to go back into the rotation here for the LSU Tigers. With that, Daniels had to release a statement talking about his gratitude for his time at LSU, and he's focusing on football and yada, yada, yada. And I just love that DJ Pickett said that he isn't planning on switching out of that jersey despite the pushback from Daniels. Lane Kiffin, forced to comment on a lot of things these days, was forced to comment on this as well. Here's what he said.
DJ is in 5, and that was a situation that was promised to him in recruiting here for him to sign here. And I've done a lot of research on that with the family and the representatives and the people. And so really, I didn't have a decision to make. It was promised to the kid. It wasn't done for whatever. I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to judge something that I wasn't here of. But when a kid's promised something to come to school, he should wear it. And so at that point, I don't really think that's my decision. You know, it should be honored what he was told. And so...
Lane Kiffin's always in the drama. It was promised him a recruiting. Did Lane not recruit DJ Pickett? Isn't DJ Pickett a freshman? Am I wrong about that? I don't know why I thought he was a freshman. Oh, he's a sophomore. Okay. So he was recruited before that. He was recruited by Brian Kelly. So Lane's not even involved in this thing, and he's got to take the shots up there from everyone, including Jaden Daniels. This is not a big deal. What I would just tell you is the drama never stops. It follows Lane Kiffin around. And by the way, I'm here for it. I'm a Lane Kiffin guy. I fall for a lot of his stuff that maybe some people don't get okey-doked by. I'm into Lane Kiffin. I think they're going to go over their win total this year. I think there's a chance LSU's in the playoff this season. This is one of the 5 or 6 most talented rosters in all of America. It's all about bringing it together, making this thing gel with all the new pieces, and Lane Kiffin has to do so. The pressure's on. With the way he left Ole Miss, to give up on a playoff team that was this close to playing for a national title, to then come to LSU because you think you can win more titles there, you better have success right away. And part of that is finding a quarterback, which he believes he did in Sam Leavitt. Sam Leavitt's a West Coast kid, grew up in Oregon, then played the last few years at Arizona State. And he says living in Baton Rouge is like living in another planet.
No, the people are great in Louisiana. The passion, you know, just walking down the street is pretty incredible. Just, you know, the way that they love the state and put on for the state, you know, it just makes you want to be here even more. People around the facility just showing so much love to Baton Rouge and the entire area. You know, it's just been a blessing being out here. You know, I'm from Oregon, so Louisiana kind of felt almost fake to me in a way. I didn't think it was a real place. But after being out here, you know, I just love the trees, and I've always wanted to be in the South. The humidity obviously was something I had to get used to, but I love it now. I love the way it makes my skin feel and, you know, everything like that. So it's been amazing.
That got weird during that conversation, I'm not going to lie. Sam Leavitt, Arizona State, you can kind of fly under the radar. I mean, you can enjoy, like, the social life of playing for the Sun Devils. Louisiana's a different story. You're a hero if you win. You are an enemy if you lose. There's going to be a pressure on Sam Leavitt that he really hasn't ever felt in his career, because at Arizona State, you're kind of out of sight, out of mind. If the football team happens to be good, it's a net positive, but there's no pressure to win. You go to LSU, you bring in all these pieces, 59 new incomers. You're expected to win right away. I wonder, with Sam Leavitt, does all of this being new around him, is that a distraction, trying to get acclimated to figure out his new surroundings while he's also learning a new playbook, learning new teammates, and learning how to navigate in the SEC? Or is he so dialed in to what he has to focus on in his final season of college football here, playing for LSU potentially, that he doesn't even notice all the distractions? That's the question. You got to figure out what the kid, how he can compartmentalize this situation. Speaking of quarterbacks, SMU's quarterback is returning, Kevin Jennings, One of the more experienced guys was in the playoffs 2 years ago. Last year had a very solid season for the Mustangs, knocked off Miami last year. And according to Brett McMurphy, Jennings is progressing quicker than expected from a jammed right index finger and is going to resume throwing next week. That according to sources. And if Jennings is right, SMU can hang with anyone. That includes Miami, who is the odds-on favorite to win the ACC this year. I really like this SMU team. I think they have to replace some skill. But Jennings is back, and all this kid does is win. They went 9-4 last year. He's 11-3 overall, Jennings, two seasons ago when they went to the college football playoff. He's thrown for 7,700 yards, 55 touchdowns in his career. If this kid from Alabama, Jalen Hale, can look good, if the ECU transfer, Yannick Smith, who had 1,000 yards last season, he can be that number one guy. They have all sorts of weapons coming in at receiver. If Kevin Jennings can make it all work and bring this team together, SMU is a challenger to Miami in the ACC. Don't get it twisted. Finally, let's go back to the SEC, where Kalen DeBoer gave an update on his quarterback battle right now in Tuscaloosa.
As the scrimmage went on, they both got better. Both had their moments early where they could have executed better. They could use some help from some guys once in a while. They're not going to be perfect all the time. Operationally, I just think, again, it's them running the show, but everyone doing their part. And so, The slow start really wasn't about one player, one position group, but both of them really, as the scrimmage went along, got in their rhythm. And so the challenge to them now will just be starting faster every single time we have these game-like scrimmages and practices coming out and setting the tone themselves.
Yeah, it's between Austin Mack right now in Tuscaloosa and Kalen Russell. Kalen Russell's a redshirt freshman. Austin Mack actually transferred from Washington with Kalen DeBoer down to T-Town. If I'm Austin Mack and I waited behind Ty Simpson and I waited for my turn to be the starting quarterback for the Tide and I lose this battle, I mean, look, people would say the kid should take some ownership of that. I'd just be annoyed at Kalen DeBoer because I've wasted a couple of years and opportunities to play at a high level in college to follow you here. I think it's got to be Austin Mack with everything he sacrificed to at least get first crack at this. There's a lot of people who think Alabama's flying under the radar. I am a Kalen DeBoer stan. I do think he's a great head coach. I just think this is a horrible fit. His teams usually are good on the O-line, but that's on the West Coast. The SEC's different. Everyone dominates the line of scrimmage. You got to be so over the top, so exceptional there if you're going to be an elite O-line. And I don't know if Kalen DeBoer has that right now at Alabama. We'll kick it back to the NFL when we return. These are the trendiest teams that I think I'm a little bit hesitant to jump in on like everyone else.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Still to come on the program, we will do a little too higher. All right, all right, all right. Looking at a 30-1 to make the college football playoff. That jumps out to me. That coming up in about 15 minutes on the show. We go behind the counter. Longtime bookmaker Arthur DeCesar will be with us in 30 minutes. Looking back on the best sound bites from the day on VSiN, including a take that I agree with from someone here criticizing the Detroit Lions. A lot of people talking about the schedule. Not sure there's a lot of substance behind the analyzation of the Detroit Lions this year. That is a team that has many flaws. You'll hear from someone on the network who I completely agree with coming up in about 45 minutes on the show. But right now, as we get set for football season, I got to thinking, because I'm consuming a lot of content, and I'm not trying to go against my contemporaries. Contrarian betting is a good thing. I'm a contrarian by nature when it comes to sports opinions. Probably why I'm wrong a lot of times. But one thing I get concerned about in sports betting is trendy teams. Because if everyone thinks that this is the underrated team, I can tell you that the bookmaker set that number so you would think that team was underrated because they think that team is not very good. And as I listen to more people make cases, I am very concerned about how high I am on the Cincinnati Bengals. Reason being, everyone else, my third grade teacher, Mrs. Dennison, called me. She's high on the Cincinnati Bengals. She wants to take a little Ja'Marr Chase Offensive Player of the Year at 10-1. Joe Burrow, MVP around 9-1. Win the AFC. Win the Super Bowl at 20-1. Heck, why not Dexter Lawrence to be Defensive Player of the Year? Zach Taylor, 28-1 Coach of the Year. Why not go all the way in on the Bengals? Everyone's saying it. everyone believes. That has me very, very scared. That is one team I'm hesitant to buy in on. The Detroit Lions are another team that everyone is saying, well, they're going to win the North. They're the favorite. Dan Campbell's going to get right. It was one down year. How certain are we that Dan Campbell knows what he's doing without Ben Johnson? I equate this to, let's use the television show Stranger Things. Dan Campbell, his entire life as an assistant, was trying to find a way and plan his path to being a head coach. And once he got that job, he had to show teams, this is what I plan on doing once I get the job. Part of that was bringing along a pupil in Ben Johnson all the way back to their Miami days. And then finally, Ben Johnson becomes this superstar play caller, and now Ben Johnson's gone. It's kind of like the Duffer brothers writing Stranger Things. They spent their entire lives planning season one. You know what happened in season two? They didn't know what they were doing. They didn't have a plan because the whole plan was get it on the air. For Ben Johnson, the whole plan was get a job, prove I belong, and then he lost one of those pieces. There's nothing about what Drew Petsig did a year ago with the Arizona Cardinals offense that leads me to believe that he's going to fix the issues that plagued the Detroit Lions a year ago. The Chargers are another trendy team, and I'm into the Chargers. But I have a lot of trepidation about that defense, specifically the pass rush, unless Akeem Mezidore, the rookie out of Miami, really makes an impact in year one. And that's asking a lot from a kid who was playing college football a year ago. And there's still the factor of Justin Herbert, and can he get it done? Can he throw you to victories in critical moments of games? The Vikings have become a trendy team. Initially, I thought, you know what? I'm into the Kyler Murray thing. $1.3 million for a guy who could potentially win a ton of games for you. Now I'm running back on that. Everyone's in the group think. Everyone thinks that the Vikings are the team to watch because now they have a quarterback. I heard Alex Rollins, NFL film analyst, who will be on the show next week. He went on Patrick Maher's show, VSiN Live, Mad Dog Sports Radio. And he was like, look, you chart the data for Kyler Murray as a passer. He doesn't use the middle of the field because he can't see his receivers. It wasn't even a shot at him. It's just realistic. If Kevin O'Connell can scheme that out of him where he can start completing passes over the middle, I'll believe. But if Kyler Murray has to live out of the pocket, throwing on the run, throwing to the sidelines only, I don't know if I can buy that Minnesota offense, even with all the weapons and the price point you're getting your quarterback at. And then the Titans. A lot of people like them to go over 6.5. And this is one that I also somewhat agree with because I think Robert Saleh got a raw deal with the Jets. He deserves another opportunity in the league. But to expect him year one to take over a Titans team that is so far away from being a contender and go over 6.5 wins, it feels like you're asking a lot. That's all. It just feels like you're asking a lot. But I do like the pieces. And I think the defense is going to be really, really good. But again, I get concerned when we're all together on this group thing. And with that, let's hear from Joe Burrow, because Joe Burrow might be the elixir. Of the teams I just listed, Cincinnati is the one I am most passionate about. It's also the trendiest one of all the teams I just listed. Joe Burrow was referred to as Mean Joe by Ja'Marr Chase. He went on Up in Adams with Kay Adams and addressed that nickname.
I'm just trying to be a driving force of urgency in the locker room, in the organization, on the practice field, day in and day out. I'm just trying to create a sense of, hey, we have this opportunity. You know, we can't let it slip through our fingertips. We got to go out and seize it.
The Joe Burrow is not messing around. That was a very serious Joe Burrow, because I think there's a lot on the line here. I think Zach Taylor's job is on the line. I think Joe Burrow's future in Cincinnati is on the line. His choice, by the way. I'm not saying they move on from him. I'm saying he says, you know what? I only have so many years to win a Super Bowl, and you guys aren't giving me the best chance. I need to go off to greener pastures. So there's a lot on the line here. That's why I like this team. I think the level of intensity they're going to have to come up with right out of the chute and win right away, it's going to be second to none in the league. And if they do that, they get off to a hot start, and they have a little bit of wiggle room to play with, it's going to be very different than we're used to seeing from the Bengals, who usually shoot themselves in the foot to start and then have to work and dig themselves out of a hole as the season goes on. But because of Burrow's attitude, because of Zach Taylor needing to save his job and go against everything we've seen in recent memory of losing right out of the gates, I think you're going to get that out of this team. It's easier said than done, but I do believe that you are going to be completely dialed in. And oh, by the way, they're the only team in the North that returns their head coach this year. That has to count for something at some point. That's why I think 20-1 for them to win the Super Bowl. That, to me, is a long shot worth taking. You can get about half of that to win the AFC. I think Burrow 10-1. With so many weak pass defenses from a year ago on their schedule, he should put up monster numbers. Now, coinciding with this, I started thinking about schedules. Because we often quote, this team has a hard schedule. This team has an easy schedule. That's why I do or don't like them. And I think to some degree, there's truth behind it, because that's the only data we have at this point to really rate these teams based on what we saw a year ago. But I just thought I'd go back last year, because we talk about the Chicago Bears this year regressing because they have the hardest schedule in the league. Well, I went back and looked. They had the third hardest schedule in the league last year. They won 11 games, okay? They pushed the Rams to the brink. Caleb Williams is another year in Ben Johnson's system. I believe they're going to stack. They're going to build. They're going to get better together, Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams. I also looked at Philadelphia a year ago. They also won 11 games. They had the fourth hardest schedule. I think sometimes we get so caught up in the schedule game. Sometimes teams are good, and you give good teams credit, and they will find ways to beat other good teams. Nick Sirianni's a weird guy, man. If you get caught up in the quotes and the sound bites from him, you think he's stupid. He's not. His teams win. He makes great adjustments. Go look year after year. 11 wins to 14 wins. 11 wins to 14 wins. Going to Super Bowls every other year. He didn't go last year. That leads me to believe he should probably contend this season with the Philadelphia Eagles now that A.J. Brown has been removed from the situation. But, for instance, a year ago, you had those two teams with the third and fourth hardest schedules, and there they were in the postseason, right? That's what they did. I think we overrate these difficult schedules a little bit too much and don't give credit that teams can improve. If you want to say that Chicago got lucky a season ago because in the fourth quarter, in the waning minutes, they pulled a rabbit out of their hat, I understand where you're coming from, but I'll go back the other way, because to me, I'm seeing a trend in coaching right now. The really good coaches, their teams step up in the fourth quarter. And I'm going to go on the side of Ben Johnson navigates this game like it's a tennis volley. He goes back and forth, back and forth. He's just hanging around. And he's waiting for you to slip up, for him to slam it home when you're not ready for it. He believes he can make the clutch calls. His quarterback can make the clutch plays when it matters in the fourth quarter. That's why those comebacks are happening. I'll say the same for Denver. That's their mindset with Bo Nix. That's how Sean Payton operates that offense. I'll also say that's the Chargers' goal. It hasn't worked out that way, but Jim Harbaugh has condensed the game, make it a lower possession contest. And then the fourth quarter, believe that you have the right stuff dialed up to win the ball game. So while everyone talks about fourth quarter comebacks, that's not something that you can repeat year in and year out. I'd argue we're transitioning to a league where these coaches understand lining up like Peyton Manning back in the day and throwing it 55 times, that is not something you can consistently win with in today's NFL. Peyton Manning's not walking through the door for any of these teams. But what you can do is coach up your team to hang around, to not blow it early. And then in the fourth quarter, save your best stuff for them, show up and win the game. And that's where I'm leaning for a team like Chicago and why I don't think the regression is coming for them in 2026. Most people think sports betting is about picking winners. Ungambled is built on a different idea, match betting and arbitrage. It's a tool that teaches you how to use sportsbook bonuses and promotional offers to capture value, whether or not your side covers. And Ungambled backs it up. If you don't turn a profit on your bankroll in 8 weeks, they refund your membership. To learn more, start with the free guide at ungambled.com/VSIN. That's ungambled.com/VSIN. Use promo code VSIN for 10% off. Bet sharp, look square.
Cashing out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We got a little bit of life with this Brewers bet. How about this? In the seventh inning, down by two, we took Milwaukee. It turns out it was 4-1. I thought it was +350. We got 4-1 in the break. The Brewers just tied it up in the top of the ninth inning. Edwin Diaz has come on and he has not been good. Garrett Mitchell drives in the game tying run. But all of a sudden, the Dodgers are in trouble. This bullpen looks bad. Looks like they just struck out Gary Sanchez. Did they review that pitch? It looked like it was a little out of the zone. Either way, Diaz is coming out of this game which is massive because Jake Bowers is up, which means a lefty is going to come in from the bullpen for Los Angeles. 4-4 in the ninth. There is two outs. Runners on first and second, though. The Brewers are a bloop single. Something dropping in here away from taking the lead in the ninth. Right now, the Dodgers are minus 141. They get to hit last, obviously, as the home team. The Brewers are plus 122. For a brief moment, I could have went plus 108 on the Dodgers. I said, you know what? Let me see how the Sanchez at bat goes, which, of course, it goes the wrong way. And now we await to see what this bullpen can do for Milwaukee. So far on the night for the Brewers, they've used Drohan 5 1/3, Senzatella for 2/3, and D.L. Hall came in and threw two. Coming up in the bottom of the ninth after the Dodgers do get this final out, whether the run scores or not. I just want to see what's upcoming for them at their part of the lineup. I think it's Hernandez or Betts, I want to say. They've used so many pinch hitters, I can't tell where the last inning left off, but I want to say it is Teoscar Hernandez who will lead off the next inning, but I might be wrong about that. Oh, no, Mookie Betts came in for him, so it wouldn't be Teoscar. I think it would be Mookie Betts. Either way, Brewer's still at the plate with a chance to do some damage. Just want to go look at yesterday and which arms might be available for Milwaukee for this matchup. Because, let's see, it's Thursday. They played San Diego yesterday. They got swept in San Diego. Remember that? 4-3-11. Ooh, this bullpen might be a little bit taxed. That could be concerning. You know what? No, they used Senzatella. They did use McGill. They used Ashby. They used Chad Patrick. Interesting. But that means that Uribe should be available here for the Brewers in this first game of four with the Dodgers. Might be a preview of the NLCS, and this is a fun matchup. Jake Bowers is up. Jake Bowers had a career year. Got off to a hot start, slowed up a little bit lately, but the power's been real, and it's lefty on lefty. Alex Vesia comes in the game. Vesia's had a very good year, 2.81 ERA, and Bowers, left-handed bat, 0-3 on the day, pulling up his splits against southpaws on the season, and he swings at the first pitch and misses it. Swung right through a high strike, 91 miles an hour, and it was out of the zone. Trying to do a little bit too much here. Jake Bowers, 21 homers, 61 ribbies, hitting .266 as of right now. Against lefties, you know what? He's hitting .256. It's just the power's not there. Only four homers and 90 at bats. Seven doubles, though, and a triple. And he fouls one straight back as well, and that one also looked high and out of the zone. I don't really love this approach from Bowers, but maybe there's an urgency in this at bat for him, thinking, look, Vesey is not going to blow it by him. He should be able to square it up pretty well, living in the you know, low 90s. And he wants to score a run versus, you know, taking a walk and leaving it up to somebody else. And that's a breaking ball that misses high from Vesey next. Betting market right now, it's the Dodgers minus 161, plus one. Something's going to happen. Went from plus 140 to plus 111 on the Brewers. What is about to happen here as Vesia has a 1-2 count on Jake Bowers, lefty brought in for a lefty-on-lefty matchup. We have 4-1 on Milwaukee, and Bowers hits one into right field. Brewers take the lead, 5-4. 4-1 is very much alive. Let's go, Milwaukee. Shout out to Alice Cooper, and Dave Roberts can't believe it. This bullpen for the Dodgers has been a liability lately, whether it's Diaz or Vesia here or Tanner Scott. They have not been good, and the Brewers have just got swept in San Diego. This is quite a confidence boost at Dodger Stadium, because remember, the last time the Brewers played in Dodger Stadium, they were getting swept in the NLCS by this Dodger squad, and maybe Milwaukee's not done here. Andrew Vaughn's up. This guy's a notorious lefty killer. Vesia, again, not going to blow it by anyone, pumping it at 92. Vaughn's 2-3 on the night. So he just took a ball. Milwaukee may not be done. 4-1 certainly going to pay for a lot of the mistakes we've made betting baseball this week. So we love to see it, but we need more. It's still the Dodgers offense. Even though they don't feel the same right now, it is still very much the Dodgers offense. There's a changeup in for a strike on the outside. I like that Vaughn didn't force it and try to swing at that. He's in a power play right now. He can wait for a pitch to drive, and he could do some damage if he gets a hold of one, because this guy throughout his career has always been really strong against lefties. In fact, let me pull up what he's doing on the year while we wait for the next pitch. Andrew Vaughn, 2-for-3 on the night, and he takes one high. And again, working behind in the count. That's when you're a pitcher like Vesia and you don't have crazy dominant stuff, you have to punch the strike zone early. You can't work from behind because now it's a fastball count and your fastball isn't your best pitch and you're facing a guy in Andrew Vaughn who hits 365 against lefties on the year. He's sitting dead red and he fouls it. Oh, he wanted that one. Probably about 92, 93. I didn't see what the radar gun said. But Andrew Vaughn this year, remember, he was injured to start the season. 365, two homers, 14 ribbies in 74 at-bats. Last year, he hit 313 against lefties. He kills left-handed pitching. But now we're looking at an even count, and Vesia can get cute, and he does. He misses upstairs. See, now if I'm Vesia, I try to pitch around Vaughn. I don't want this guy to beat me because he's capable of making me really pay. After that, it's Yelich. I'd rather go Yelich lefty on lefty. And by the way, Andrew Vaughn's playing third base. When did that start happening for the Brewers? Hold on. That is news to me. I didn't realize he could play third base. Okay. And that misses inside. See, I think Vesia didn't want to mess around once it got into a good fastball count and was just nibbling and hoping that Vaughn would beat himself. Instead, he walks him. Bases are loaded now for Yelich. I do think this is a better matchup for Alex Vesia, but at the same time, you know, Yelich is a veteran. He's been through this before. This is why they paid him all that money a few years ago, a former MVP. And I have to imagine he's going to be either sitting dead red on something that he can square up or maybe be super patient and put the pressure on Vesia. And Vesia misses wide, high and wide there for the first pitch. Now, this is a great spot for Yelich. Betting market, by the way, has shifted. Brewers minus 720, Dodgers plus 543. I could come back the other way and take the Dodgers right now if I wanted to and be sitting pretty in either direction. I'm going to ride with my guys right now because I love the Brewers, but and that's a fastball, and Yelich doesn't get a hold of it. 92 miles an hour and it's right down the pipe. Don't love that. I mean, the smart thing to do right now would be to take the Dodgers 5-1, but I have never once on this program ever claimed to be a smart person. Instead, I'm going to let it ride on the Brewers, believe that they can finish this job against the scuffling Dodgers team. And that one is missed, a foul ball straight back by Yelich. But the Dodgers are still plus 160 to win the World Series. Despite the run that they're on, with the way the offense has played lately, it's crazy because a year ago, they limped into the postseason. Remember, they lost their one seed. And I got them 5-1 to win the World Series. Mitch Moss and Kelly Bidlin, I think, got around 7-1. I don't know if we, I think the books learned their lesson. I don't think we ever get that this year, no matter how bad they look the rest of the way. That is another ball thrown. We're even at 2-2 on Yelich. This is it's two straight fastball counts coming up here, unless he strikes them out, right? But I find it hard to believe that Vesia would strike out Yelich in this spot. Let's see what he reaches back for. Yelich is going to have to just protect. And that one is fouled by Yelich. See, and that was a slider. That's a gutsy call on 2-2 by Vesia to throw a slider. That is a gutsy pitch there. 5-4 the score, top of the ninth. Brewers just took the lead. They have scored three runs in the top of the ninth inning to take the lead 5-4. Christian Yelich is at the plate with the bases loaded. Alex Vesia, the lefty, in to face him. Yelich is 1-for-4 today. Let's see what he can do here. I'd love another run or two. Oh, it'd make me feel so good. Only hitting 235 against lefties and 81 at-bats this season. And that one misses wide. Oh, it's a full count. Pressure is on Alex Vesia. He's had a very fine season, but this is a bad spot. Oh, Yelich could blow this thing wide open, just putting bat on ball and plating too, because Dodgers offense has been rough of late. And the payoff pitch, oh, it's punched up the middle, but Mookie Betts is waiting at shortstop, and they make the out at first. I think Vesia threw a breaking ball there. That's respect to throw that pitch in that situation. Although Yelich got good wood on it. It's just that Mookie Betts was standing right there to field it. So we go to the bottom of the ninth. Our 4-1 on Milwaukee in game looks good. They're laying $5 and the Dodgers are plus 397. I'll tell you what happens there coming up in just a little bit, but we also have to go behind the counter. How should people be betting these preseason NFL games? That's on the other side of cashing out.